This is the SF Sigma Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Patrick Hester, and today I have an interview I did while on faculty at the Pikes Peak Writers Conference in Colorado Springs, Colorado, but you knew that. I got my eye on you. To learn more about the Pikes Peak Writers Conference, just go to their website, pikespeakswriters.com. It's way easier than me having to sit here and read crap. Today's guest is Aaron Michael Ritchie. His first novel, The Never Prayer, was published in March of 2012 to a fanfare of sparkling reviews, including an almost win in the RMFW Gold Contest. Since then, he's been paid to write steampunk, cyberpunk, and sci-fi western short stories. His story, The Dirges of Percival LeWand, appears in the pages of Penny Dread Tales, Volume 3. His next novel, Long Live the Suicide King, is currently giving hope to the masses. And as a former story addict and television connoisseur, he lives in Colorado with his wife and two goddesses posing as his daughters. For more about Aaron, his books, and how to overcome artistic angst, visit www.aaronmritchie.com. He's on Facebook as Aaron Michael Ritchie, and he tweets at Aaron M. Ritchie. And now, let's talk about Joss Whedon. I'm sitting here at Pikes Peak Writers Conference 2014 in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And my guest is Aaron Michael Ritchie, who is are you the Toastmaster, Master of Ceremonies? What's the official title here?
Master of Ceremonies.
Okay, and what does that entail?
That entails me being funny. No, really, my goal for being MC here was to be funny, to be maybe a little poignant, and then to be invisible, because I didn't want to kind of take things over. So really, I'm kind of transition. So I make transitions.
And you've been hilarious.
Okay, that's... Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, everybody's laughing. Everybody's enjoying it. Everybody's having a good time.
It's fun.
So I'm curious first, how did you get involved with PPWC?
You know, it's really my wife. All my life, I've dreamed about being a writer. I mean, from day one. You know, my grandmother asked me, what do you want to be when I grow up? And I would say, I either want to be a brain surgeon, a truck driver, or a writer. And so the brain surgery and the truck driving. Though I do like trucker music.
BJ and the Bear.
BJ and the... Yeah, totally. Man, the year is 1978. So I always wanted to be a writer, and so I wrote and wrote and wrote in obscurity, and I couldn't talk about it, and I was terrified people might find out. It was my dirty little secret, mm-hmm. You know. I wrote... And I didn't have any sort of craft idea, and I didn't really worry about genre. So, and I really like science fiction and fantasy, and I really like kind of literary fiction. So I blended them in these like postmodern, massive like Russian novel tomes that were like part. It's like David Lynch does The Lord of the Rings, with this kind of pseudo religious undertone, right? Because I grew up very Catholic.
And so did I.
So. I had a publicist who said, Aaron, your books are like dark, edgy YA with a chewy, hopeful, nuggety center. So it was my wife, and my wife, in 2005, our second baby was born, and she, Ella, didn't sleep either. And so two in a row, Patrick, of kids who never slept.
Never slept.
I'm pretty sure I was a Nazi in my last life. And I was losing it. And she's like, Aaron, you need to focus on something. Let's focus on your writing. And I said, okay. You know, I'm willing to do what it takes to, you know, really take this seriously. And so she said, okay, you have to get a critique group. You have to start going to conferences. You know, you have to take this more seriously. You have to learn craft. And I'm like, okay. So I went to Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers. Mm-hmm. And I went to Pikes. And Linda Rohrbaugh, actually, is another writer, said, you should go to Pikes Peak because it's like the hippest. It's like, you know, a very serious business crowd. It's very, you know, fun and kind of young and hip. And so I said, okay. And so I wound up here, and I've been coming every year ever since.
Very cool. Is this your first time as a master, like Toastmaster?
No, I was the MC last year.
Okay.
And so that went well.
And so they asked you back.
I did the Nano Pico Pico last year. It was like, I pretended I was writing a novel over the weekend, so I did all the novel writing stuff. So
very cool. And so you've got some stuff published.
I did.
Since then.
So 2006, I started kind of my road to, it became more of a business, less of a hobby. Mm-hmm. You know, I started writing every day. I started, you know, learning craft and learning really how to write. And so in 2012, my first novel came out called The Never Prayer. Mm-hmm. And it really was a book that I wrote really because the literary agent just said, okay, vampires are done. We're going to write angels.
Right.
And I'm like, well, I don't really like the whole angel because I don't like the whole idea of like hierarchy because it's such BS, right? This mm-hmm. like there's like levels of angels.
Right.
And so I'm like, I'm going to do my angels a little differently. And so then I was like, you know, I always like to find something in a book I really like. And so the thing I really liked about the idea of an angel book is I wanted to make my angel an atheist. And I really wanted to kind of, I'm a big fan of Stephen King, and I really wanted to ground my book in reality and then introduce the paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
And so my angels and demons are very, very different kind of than your standard fare. I mean, it really, it's very... they're kind of a more realistic kind of what if. I mean, there is definitely the paranormal,
mm-hmm.
And there's you know coming back from the dead and that kind of a thing. But it was such a fun book to write because it had all of the elements that I love to write about. You know, it had kind of this dark edge and kind of this fragile hope and you know, I talked about atheism because I love kind of the discussion between atheists and theists, right?
Sure.
So it had kind of that, and really how we deal with suffering in the world,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I mean, being human is very difficult. And so we have to try to understand suffering in our own lives and kind of this idea. And so, there, you know, so in The Never Prayer, that was definitely kind of the theme that ran through there. And so the book that just came out in April is called Long Live the Suicide King,
mm-hmm.
and it's a contemporary YA, a young adult novel. And again, it has that, you know, very similar themes. It's a story about a kid who quits doing drugs and becomes suicidal. But the more suicidal he gets, the more interesting his life becomes.
Huh.
And so it's kind of this irony. And so he his embrace of kind of this, okay, I'm going to die, really kind of opens his mind to all of these people and places and things in his life that he had never really considered.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, he's, you know, my wife says, Aaron, it's really a book about finding hope in unexpected places. And I'm like, no, it's really more of like donuts. And I have a great, one of the villains in there is, if I ever, I get people, you know, I hate the question, you know, who'd play the characters in the sure. movie, because to me, they're like real people. And so it's like trying to figure out who would play me in a movie. And so, but there's one character I totally based upon Lawrence Fishburne's Morpheus.
Nice.
And he's like the big drug kingpin. Because there's a crime kind of thriller element to it as
well.
So
you did the Marvel thing.
The Marvel thing?
Yeah, when they did the Ultimates, the artist said, I'm going to change Nick Fury. I'm going to make him look like Samuel L. Jackson. Oh. And he intentionally drew him like Samuel L. Jackson, right?
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, they're like, well, who else can play him in the movies but Samuel L. Jackson. Yeah.
Samuel Jackson's like in every single movie ever, so yeah. It was perfect. And he's a great Nick Fury.
Oh, he's
a
God, he's Fury. Awesome.
Well, then it's Joss Whedon and what, you know.
Oh, sure.
So Lawrence Fishburne, man, I did an audio version because on the final draft I like to read it out loud.
And I was going to ask you, because of your voice, have you ever done voiceovers? Have you ever done podcasts? Do you narrate your own audiobooks?
Yeah.
You've got a great voice.
Well, thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome.
You know, so it really goes back to a woman.
You're totally embarrassed now, aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
You're blushing.
No, it goes back to, so I had a friend named G. Martin, and she was an older woman, and she loved to read,
mm-hmm.
and she was going blind. And I said, okay, I want to read one of my books to her, my first book, because she was really supportive. She was one of the people who really, I mean, you know, fiction writing and kind of story writing really saved my life in a very little room. It gave me a focus. And kind of a passion. And so I read out loud my first ever novel. And this is like, I mean, it was this massive, I mean, it was long.
Mm-hmm.
I had like 14 million characters and there was a whole bunch of stuff going on. And I read it out loud to her and on cassette tapes, right?
Because okay,
this
yeah.
is back in the day. And she listened to the whole thing and she said, Aaron, it's very interesting. But you have a lot of characters, and it's very self-indulgent. And it was like the perfect critique, because like it was exactly that. So yeah, so I read my books out loud, and I record them, and I keep recordings. And so eventually, with Long Live the Suicide King, so I read it when I go through the final edit and read it out loud to fix kind of typos and awkward sentences. And I do like subtle accents, you know. And so, yeah, I'm going to do something with that eventually.
Are you familiar with ACX.com?
No.
That is the audio branch of ebook kind of publishing.
Oh, like a Kobo.
Yeah, you can go there, and as long as you have a book in Amazon, you can do an audio book on ACX, and they'll push it through to Audible.
Oh.
And you can either do it yourself, or you can put it out on the ACX site and have people bid on doing the voice and reading them. And then you can either pay them up front, like a contract, or you can have them take a portion of the proceeds as you're selling it. But yeah, I can totally see you doing that.
I did it to my first novel as well, but I don't have the rights yet for that. So I'm totally going to be... Now, the book I'm working on now is like this big sci-fi western, like Firefly thing, and I'm going to have my daughter read it.
Awesome.
Because I can't read like a 16-year-old girl.
You are wearing a brown coat.
I am wearing a brown coat. Yep. You can't stop the signal.
No, you can't stop the signal.
And I'm iffy if I want Firefly to come back. Because it's perfect the way it is, right? It didn't jump the shark. There's no like Battlestar Galactica angels. Mm-hmm. It's very... 13 episodes in a movie, perfect.
Well, in the comics.
And, well, I don't...
Did you not like the comics?
Well, it's like, for me, it's like this... It's like the, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer has comics, and I just can't make the jump. I love comics, don't get me wrong, but it's like TV show is TV show, comics is comics. And
I liked the Buffy comics to a point. I did not care for the Angel After the Fall. They did Angel After the Fall, and I didn't really care for that. Because I thought Wesley is my favorite character in the Buffyverse.
No.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because he has such a great arc. He goes from this bumbling kind of character all the way to this very dark character.
Oh, sure.
Like, he has this whole arc, you know, the betrayal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, the abandonment. Everybody abandons him because of the betrayal. And then he becomes what he always kind of wanted to be, which is a badass.
Yeah.
But he becomes very, very dark, and then he ends tragically.
Yeah.
He has my favorite arc
of
all the characters in that show, in that universe.
Wow.
And then in After the Fall, they bring him back as a ghost because, of course, Wolfram and Hart, when you have a contract with them, it's a contract for eternity.
That's right.
So I didn't really care for that.
Because he was done, right? He did his character arc. He died tragically. He's kind of this tragic figure. And to bring him back was like cheating.
To me, yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because I liked that in the end, the demon was like, you can't die. I'm not done with you yet. And he's like, I'm really sorry. And then she changes back to Fred. And she's giving him that moment to be with Fred as he's dying.
Yeah.
One gets it until I explain it to them.
Yeah, you think of Wes. I like this character arc too because I like that kind of. And I like what they did with, who's a popular girl? I can never remember.
Charisma Carpenter, Cordy.
Cordelia. I really like, because I like that she starts off as this very one dimensional princess.
Mm-hmm.
And then the arc in, you know, Buffy and kind of she
and
becomes.
And
then
the Angel, she starts becoming more serious. I didn't like the end. They kind of got rid of her because she was pregnant.
Yeah. Well, Angel had, I think it kind of, there was like the perfect episode where God comes down to the world, right? And mm-hmm. everyone is happy, but we have no free will.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it kind of unraveled for me. But
actually, one of the best episodes of Angel, and we're going way off. The best episode is the Muppet episode in season 5.
Yes.
Smile Time.
Yeah, that was inspired.
Oh.
Well, that's like Hush.
You know who wrote it?
Season.
The guy who did the Tick TV show. I kid you not.
I love the Tick.
Yeah, it was the same. He became an executive producer on the show. And he was part of that for couple last seasons.
Uh-huh.
And into season 5. And he was responsible for that.
Awesome. That's funny. That was good.
Yeah.
That's good.
So you're a Whedon fan.
Yeah, I am. You know, I am. So the one I'm working on now is this sci-fi western, and I never would have started writing it if not for Firefly, because I had given up. I'm like, no, you know, no one likes Firefly, you know, no one likes sci-fi westerns, and it's this kind of very complicated world, and, you know. But him doing Firefly, doing it so well, that I totally gravitated to that. But and I really like, you know, the Long Live the Suicide King. It is a contemporary YA, and it's very rooted in this world. And I think for the story, it's very appropriate. Mm-hmm. But I really like, this is really what I want to write, Patrick. This is really what I want to write.
The sci-fi western kind
of thing? I want to write
something else. Okay.
Literary fiction
mm-hmm.
with kind of speculative fiction tropes.
Okay. Because
that's what my joy is.
You know? You want to be on the shelf next to Anne Rice.
I don't know.
She's not in sci-fi. She's not in horror. She's in literature.
Yeah. You think Anne Rice, and suddenly I'm thinking Snow White and naughty books.
No.
But, no,
well, Stephen King. He's in literature.
Like Stephen King. Like,
he's
exactly.
He's not in horror.
Yeah.
Anne Rice, Stephen King, they're all over in literature. That's what you want.
And that's Joss. I would argue that Joss Whedon is literary, right? The things he can do with Buffy and the things he can do with these kind of, you know, science fiction fantasy tropes are ingenious. And they resonate with such emotional power that it is... I mean, you know, people say, you know, you shouldn't write prologues. And I would argue a perfect example of when a prologue is the Battle of Serenity Valley. Mm-hmm. It sets up the whole show, right? And it sets up all of this. And it shows Malcolm in this great light that haunts the rest of the series.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'm a huge Joss Whedon fan. And
I am too.
So someday I'm going to be Joss Whedon.
I wear a shirt that says, Joss Whedon is my master now.
And the Avengers. I mean, again.
Yes.
Again, look what he did with the Avengers. And people are like, oh, the Avengers was great. And they don't, you know, kind of people, kind of, you know, civilians.
Yes.
Right?
Muggles.
What?
Muggles. That's what I call them.
Muggles. You know, they're like, oh, it's a great movie, but when they leave. But I'm like, it's good because of, you know, Joss Whedon and Mark D'Onofrio's performances. He walked on the screen and I got teary-eyed because he just emoted this kind of desperate, angry, you know.
No. They finally got the Hulk.
Yes.
Yes. They finally got Banner. They did it. They managed it.
Yes. Yeah. And his acting was just amazing. But then again, I like Ang Lee's, and I know that makes me unpopular.
Yeah, a lot of people did not like Ang Lee's. I was trying to explain to someone who hadn't seen any of the movies, you know, what about the other Hulk movie? And I said, well, the problem is that it was very different from the comics.
Uh-huh.
And that's why it didn't resonate with people.
You know,
it was so different. He tried to make it more. It was the comparison I made was the original Star Trek pilot versus the one that got the series picked up. It was cerebral. It was more about psychology and the trauma of him as a boy, and it, you know, he was trying to make it more about emotion and that kind of stuff. The Ang Lee version, and. People went, no, where's Lou Ferrigno? Where's, you know, we're used to Bill Bixby.
In a sense, it's show, don't tell. And there was a lot of telling in the first one. Whereas in the Avengers, Mark D'Onofrio goes out and it's just all show.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know, you don't want to, you know, the big guys might come out.
So I'm curious, when you write, what do you write on? What do you
oh, man,
computer?
I'm a...
Word?
I can't do pen and paper.
That's fine.
I can't do that. No, I grab my laptop, I put in, you know, loud music, and I just, I'm a...
But what's your software?
I slam it on. I use Word. I'm just a Word guy.
Okay.
And Excel. I outline in Excel. And I'm thinking about moving to Scrivener.
Good.
Well, here's the deal, Patrick. My day job is, I'm a technical guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I do software all day. And so when I clock out, the last thing in the world I want to do is learn software.
Sure.
And so that's why I've been resistant to Scrivener. But I kind of like their word count. They have kind of an interesting outline, you know.
Yes.
So I'm eventually going
to
make the...
I'm the evangelist. Every convention I go to, every conference, every conversation I have with an author, I tell them about Scrivener. I need to have stock at this point. They need to go public. They need to do an IPO. They need to include me in it. Because
I
bring a lot of people.
Guy,
yes.
You could become a Scrivener.
I'm teaching it here tomorrow.
Right. I'll try to, maybe I'll look at my schedule and see if I can.
It's the last thing?
No. Okay. So, but you know, really what I've come down to is, I just have to write sci-fi fantasy or I just have to write literary.
Mm-hmm.
And I've really come to the conclusion that I want to do both. And, you know, I'm going to aim high because...
I'm definitely a fan of writers writing what they want to write.
Yeah.
You know, I talk to a lot of people who are like, well, this trend's going on. I'm trying to catch in on this one. I'm trying to catch this wave. And it's like, write what you want to write and then find the market.
Well, yeah. No, and I think it's important to be aware.
Sure.
But I also think, you know, for me, I'm going to be spending thousands of hours of my life. And I've been working on a couple of projects that I like, but they're not that kind of that, you know, juicy... kind of, you know, I was talking with a woman about Aliens, right? And how just juicy that was. And you had so many themes and the characters were so good. And it's so exciting, right?
And the prologue sucked.
The pro. Let me sit.
Prometheus.
Oh no no no! That's wait a minute. La 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 la. I'm not listening. I'm not listening. No. So really, it's really what I'm really happy about is the books that are coming out now are really books that I'm very proud of, and they really have the elements that I really really enjoy. So,
are you online? Do you have an online presence?
I do an online presence.
Website, Twitter, Facebook.
I got a website, Twitter, Facebook.
Okay.
I'm tweeting more.
Where? What's your handle?
Aaron M. Ritchie.
Mm-hmm. R I T C H E Y.
R-I-T-C-H-E-Y. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
that's your website too.
Website is AaronMRitchie.com.
Okay.
And find me on Facebook, Aaron Michael Ritchie.
Doing the blog?
I blog a little, just enough. Mm-hmm. Just enough. Just enough to be saucy.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Links on your website to your books where people can buy them?
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
Who did your cover for the second one?
It was Suicide my publisher. Keys. It was Alicia Howie, Deb Courtney through Courtney Literary. She took the picture.
Okay.
And Becky Davis, a local kind of graphic artist, did the cover. And it turned out just dynamite.
It did. Yeah, it's great.
I got very lucky. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, definitely.
Okay. And do you do any other conferences? Do you run any conventions?
If someone
wants to find you. And like buy you a drink and talk to you about your writing or get you to sign something. Where are they going to find you this year?
This year I love romantic times, and I'm actually working on a romance with a friend of mine.
Okay,
that's so much fun, right? It's not like the book of my heart, and it's not like this literary masterpiece, you know.
It's your guilty pleasure.
It's so much fun. I'm like, I go to Romantic Times, and that's a great national readers convention, and they don't just do romance; they do all genres.
New Orleans this year?
It's in New Orleans.
Yeah, I got a map of all the cons.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. I'll be at RMFW, Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers, in September.
Okay,
presenting.
Mile High Con,
I should be there.
Okay.
And I really
Has Rose sent you an email yet?
I got the email from Rose. Yeah. Me and Jason Heller might do something.
Nice.
Kind of like music and science fiction and fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Because we both like music. And then Anomaly Con, I really like Anomaly Con. It's the Denver steampunk convention. And I think hopefully, if all goes well, my sci-fi western will be premiering at Anomaly Con in 2015, if all goes well, if the stars align. But and Anomaly Con is great because I work with Quincy J. Allen on his Penny Dreadful.
Okay.
And Penny Dreadful Tales 5 through 4. 4 is coming out in June, and I have a story.
Very cool.
I have a story in that one. I have a story in Penny Dreadful 3. And in my story of Penny Dreadful series, actually, it's been submitted. I have to get it. It's either a Hugo or a Nebula.
Nice.
So I'm very excited about that. I probably won't. I mean, it's a small kind of steampunk anthology, but so I'm very excited about
that. That's very cool.
Yeah. I'm working on the second book in the sci-fi western, and I have fallen in love with 30 Seconds to Mars.
Okay.
And I know a lot of writers who write to 30 Seconds to Mars. And it is this... I'm a little jealous because, like, Jared Leto is a part of it. And so he wins Academy Award and he's a rock star. So I'm a little jealous. But it's this kind of... I was talking with someone and I'm like, it's like dramatic, like, Meatloaf and, like... like, oh, kind of sappy, like,
I
Air Supply.
Do
that's right.
Thing for love. But I won't do that.
Won't do that. Yeah, and that's actually Jim Steinman.
I shouldn't have done that. My throat's gone.
No, so yeah, so 30 Seconds to Mars, and also a shout out to it's a Denver band, 16 Horsepower, which is kind of this country, and they broke up a while ago, and so the guy moved on to do Woven Hand. But those two kind of, those are on the soundtrack of my, because I have soundtracks for books. And so Woven Hand is this kind of... My friend calls it Y'alternative. And so it's kind of like the Pogues, but instead of like rock and... Instead of like punk and folk, it's like punk and country.
I've just... Along similar lines, are you familiar with an author named Delilah S. Dawson? She does...
I've seen her name.
She says Geek Smut is what she writes.
Okay.
And she has totally turned me on. We both like Justified. We love Justified. Justified's a fantastic
show. Oh, I know,
yes. She's turned me on to Gangsta Grass.
Oh, I know where you're going.
Gangster Bluegrass. And that's the theme and the soundtrack for Justified.
So is it like, is like bluegrass like redoing like hip hop songs? Like
no, rap songs? It's rappers and bluegrass people getting together and doing songs.
Wow.
It's gangstagrass.
I'm totally checking that
out. It's awesome.
That sounds awesome.
It is awesome. It's a trip. But I do like the what you're talking about, the Pickin' On series, where bluegrass does classic rock. Is that what you were talking about?
No, this is, it's a band. I mean, Slim Cessna's Auto Club, they call it the Denver Sound.
Okay.
It's this, it's really country, it's like gothic country. And so Slim Cessna's Auto Club, Munley, 16 Horsepower. 16 Horsepower is my favorite. It's brilliant. You'll either love it.
Or hate it.
Or hate it. Okay. And so my friends who I've turned it on to, I play them a song and they either go out and buy out all. Mm-hmm. Or they look at me funny. So yeah.
Well, the Pickin' On series was the one that tripped me out because I heard the Eye of the Tiger in that song, but as a bluegrass song, and I said, "What the hell is this? I have to figure this out." And so I found out there's this whole series of albums called the Pickin' On series.
Oh yeah.
And it's Pickin' On tribute to Led Zeppelin, Pickin' On tribute to this one. That one. They've got, they're doing Eye of the Tiger, they're doing Rolling Stones, they're doing Zeppelin, they're doing Kansas, and it's all these classic rock songs, but in bluegrass. They did Elton John.
Oh, that's cool.
And it just tripped me out, and so I've actually put it on the podcast before. I put little snippets of it in there.
That's going on the soundtrack of the third book, totally.
Oh, it's such
Pickin'
a trip.
Pickin' On, okay.
Pickin' On, yes.
Oh man, that's cool. I have a version of Gin and Juice, the Snoop Doggy Dog, done bluegrass.
Nice.
It's pretty funny. So,
well, I actually, because of the Pickin' On stuff and the bluegrass stuff, I've discovered the Waylon Jennings. Instead of Waylon Jennings. Waylon Jennings. And they do tons of trippy kind of bluegrass and crossover.
See, and this is what's so nice about our day and age, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of the exhaustion of genre. I mean,
yes.
We push genre to now we can start playing with
That's
it.
Why I like Angry Robot, because on the back of the Angry Robot books, they have suggested categories. Not genres. They have suggested ones where the books can fit in on the bookshelves. They don't have to be inside.
God, that is brilliant.
Yes.
Oh, that's so cool.
Well, I promised you about 25 minutes, and we're there.
Okay.
So, anything you want to tell our listeners before I let you go? Final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
Go read your books.
You know, no, go. Yeah, definitely. Buy my books. Support a starving artist. I've really come to enjoy the writing process, and I've really enjoyed where I am now. And it's, you know, a lot of times I started this thinking, okay, I want to be rich and famous, and, you know, I want to have my own Learjet. And what it's really kind of changed for me is really it's getting my books out into the world. It's writing things that are very important to me and getting my books out in the world by any means necessary. And then, you know, hearing from readers. I mean, that's so great because a lot of this stuff I have really resonates with some people because it's not kind of your typical fare. So thank you so much, Patrick.
No problem. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. And again, awesome job. Everybody's loving it.
Oh, that's good.
Yes.
That's good.
It's you've had people rolling.
Oh,
it's
good.
It's just awesome.
It's been fun.
Excellent job. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks again to Aaron Michael Ritchie for being a great Toastmaster and guest. I totally converted him to Scrivener, by the way. He bought me a latte. Said I changed his life. Scrivener. Thanks to the folks at the PPWC. For all the stuff I've mentioned before, I mean, come on. You guys listen to it. You know all the stuff I mentioned. And I also want to thank them for that one room where the AC wasn't really working all that well and we were all just kind of melting. Thank you to Chuck Wendig for apparently not framing the poster and tweeting the hell out of it. Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate that. Yeah. Anyway. No, this is not the... Well, yeah, maybe this is the last one. This could be the last one, folks. The other ones I did for I Should Be Writing, so you may have to look for those over on Mer Lafferty's website, merverse.com. Other than that, we've got other stuff coming for you here at SF Signal. Stick around. Come back week after week. Click the little download button. You'll appreciate it. Am I going to London? I don't know. Anything is possible. Quit asking. Until next time. Take it away, and scene people, and Romeo, and thinking and crap. Thank you for listening to the SF Signal podcast.
Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the link to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com, and you can also search SF Signal in iTunes to find the feed. If you enjoyed this podcast, help us boost the signal by telling your friends. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melts featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SFNF field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, new author spotlights, movie reviews, videos, science fiction, fantasy, and horror tidbits, free fiction roundups, and the new genre-related crowdfunding roundups. Click the RSS button in the sidebar to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
Magic wooey.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
And scene.